लगन गुरु चरणन की मोही लागी, लगन गुरु चरणन की चरण
बिना। Man often becomes what he believes himself to be. If I keep on saying to myself that I cannot do a certain thing, it is possible that I may end by really becoming incapable of doing it. On the contrary, if I have the belief that I can do it, I shall surely acquire the capacity to do it, even if I may not have it at the beginning. Religion is the tie that binds one to one's creator, and whilst the body perishes, as it has to, religion persists even after death. I claim that human mind or human society is not divided into watertight compartments called social, political, and religious. All act and react upon one another. Prayer is the key of the morning and the bolt of the evening. Do not worry in the least about yourself. Leave all worry to God. This appears to be the commandment in all religions. This need not frighten anyone. He who devotes himself to service with a clear conscience will day by day grasp the necessity for it in greater measure, and will continually grow richer in faith. The path of service can hardly be trodden by one who is not prepared to renounce self-interest and to recognize the conditions of his birth. Consciously or unconsciously, every one of us does render some service or other. If we cultivate the habit of doing this service deliberately, our desire for service will steadily grow stronger and will make not only for our own happiness, but that of the world at large. I believe in the fundamental truth of all great religions of the world. I believe that they are all God-given, and I believe that they were necessary for the people to whom these religions were revealed. And I believe that if only we could all of us read the scriptures of the different faiths from the standpoint of the followers of these faiths, we should find that they were at bottom all one and were all helpful to one another. Faith is a function of the heart. It must be enforced by reason. The two are not antagonistic, as some think. The more intense one's faith is, the more it whets one's reason. When faith becomes blind, it dies. Close the day with prayer, so that you may have a peaceful night, free from dreams and nightmares. When I admire the wonder of a sunset or the beauty of the moon, my soul expands in worship of the Creator. The way of peace is the way of truth. Truthfulness is even more important than peacefulness. Indeed, lying is the mother of violence. A truthful man cannot long remain violent. He will perceive in the course of his search that he has no need to be violent, and he will further discover that so long as there is the slightest trace of violence in him, he will fail to find the truth he is searching. There is no halfway between truth and non-violence on the one hand and untruth and violence on the other. We may never be strong enough to be entirely non-violent in thought, word, and deed, but we must keep non-violence as our goal and make a steady progress towards it. The attainment of freedom, whether for a man, a nation, or the world, must be in exact proportion to the attainment of non-violence by each. Let those, therefore, who believe in non-violence as the only method of achieving real freedom, keep the lamp of non-violence as the only method of achieving real freedom. Keep the lamp of non-violence burning bright in the midst of the present impenetrable gloom. The truth of a few will count. The untruth of millions will vanish even like chaff before a whiff of wind. It is impossible for one to be internationalist without being a nationalist. Internationalism is possible only when nationalism becomes a fact. That is, when peoples belonging to different countries have organized themselves and are able to act as one man. What I want you to understand is the message of Asia. It is not to be learnt through the Western spectacles or by imitating the atom bomb. If you want to give a message to the West, it must be the message of love and the message of truth. I do not want merely to appeal to your head. I want to capture your heart. In this age of democracy, in this age of awakening of the poorest of the poor, you can re-deliver this message with the greatest emphasis. You will complete the conquest of the West not through vengeance because you have been exploited, but with real understanding. I am sanguine if all of you put your hearts together, not merely heads, to understand the secret of the message these wise men of the East have left to us, and if we really become worthy of that great message, the conquest of the West will be completed. This conquest will be loved by the West itself. The West is today pining for wisdom. It is despairing of a multiplication of the atom bombs, because atom bombs mean utter destruction, not merely of the West, but of the whole world. As if the prophecy of the Bible is going to be fulfilled and there is to be a perfect deluge. It is up to you to tell the world of its wickedness and sin. That is the heritage your teachers and my teachers have taught Asia. If there were no greed, there would be no occasion for armaments. The principle of non-violence necessitates complete abstention from exploitation in any form. As soon as the spirit of exploitation is gone, armaments will be felt as a positive, unbearable burden. Real disarmament cannot come unless the nations of the world cease to exploit one another. The fashion nowadays is to take for granted that whatever America and England are doing is good enough for us. But the figures given by the writer of the cost to America of her armament are too terrible to contemplate. War has become a matter of money and resourcefulness in inventing weapons of destruction. It is no longer a matter of personal bravery or endurance. Do we wish to copy this method of defending ourselves? Even if we do, have we the financial ability? We complain of an ever-growing military expenditure, but if we would copy America or England, we would have to increase the burden tenfold. The nation cannot be kept on the non-violent path by violence. It must grow from within to the state it may aspire to. The question, therefore, for us to consider is, what is our immediate aspiration? Do we first want to copy the Western nations, and then, in the dim and distant future, having gone through the agony, retrace our steps? Or do we want to strike out on an original path and thereby win and assert our freedom? Here, there is no question of compromises with cowardice. Either we train and arm ourselves for destruction, but in self-defense, and in the process train for suffering too, or we merely prepare ourselves for suffering, for defending the country, or delivering it from domination. In either case, bravery is indispensable. In the first case, personal bravery is not of such importance as the second. In the second case, too, we shall perhaps never be able to do without violence altogether. But violence then will be subservient to non-violence and will always be a diminishing factor in national life. If the mad race for armaments continues, it is bound to result in a slaughter such as never occurred in history. If there is a victor left, the very victory will be a living death for the nation that emerges victorious. At the present moment, though the national creed is one of non-violence, in thought and word at least we seem to be drifting towards violence. Impatience pervades the atmosphere. We are restrained from violence through our weakness. What is wanted is a deliberate giving up of violence out of strength. To be able to do this requires imagination coupled with a penetrating study of the world drift. Today, the superficial glamour of the West dazzles us, and we mistake for progress the giddy dance which engages us from day to day. We refuse to see that it is surely leading us to death. Above all, we must recognize that to compete with the Western nations on their terms is to court suicide. Whereas if we realize that notwithstanding the seeming supremacy of violence, it is the moral force that governs the universe, we should train for non-violence with the fullest faith in its limitless possibilities. If we are to be saved and are to make a substantial contribution to the world's progress, ours must emphatically and predominantly be the way of peace. It may be long before the law of love will be recognized in internal affairs. The machineries of governments stand between and hide the hearts of one people from those of another. There have been cataclysmic changes in the world. Do I still adhere to my faith in truth and non-violence? Has not the atom bomb exploded that faith? Non-violence is the only thing that the atom bomb cannot destroy. I did not move a muscle when I first heard that the atom bomb had wiped out Hiroshima. On the contrary, I said to myself, unless now the world adopts non-violence, it will spell certain suicide for mankind. It has been suggested by American friends that the atom bomb will bring in ahimsa, non-violence, as nothing else can. It will, if it is meant that its destructive power will so disgust the world that it will turn away from violence for the time being. This is very like a man glutting himself with dainties to the point of nausea and turning away from them only to return with redoubled zeal after the effect of nausea is well over. Precisely in the same manner will the world return to violence with renewed zeal after the effect of disgust is worn out. Often does good come out of evil, but that is God's, not man's plan. Man knows that only evil can come out of evil, as good out of good. That atomic energy, though harnessed by American scientists and army men for destructive purposes, may be utilized by other scientists for humanitarian purposes, is undoubtedly within the realm of possibility. But That is not what was meant by my American friends. They were not so simple as to put a question which connoted an obvious truth. An incendiary uses fire for his destructive and nefarious purposes. A housewife makes daily use of it in preparing nourishing food for mankind. So far as I can see, the atomic bomb has deadened the finest feeling that has sustained mankind for ages. There used to be the so-called laws of war which made it tolerable. Now we know the naked truth. War knows no law except that of might. The atom bomb brought an empty victory to the Allied armies, but it resulted for the time being in destroying the soul of Japan. What has happened to the soul of the destroying nation is yet too early to see. Forces of nature act in a mysterious manner. We can but solve the mystery by deducing the unknown result from the known results of similar events. A slaveholder cannot hold a slave without putting himself or his deputy in the cage holding the slave. Let no one run away with the idea that I wish to put in a defense of Japanese misdeeds in pursuance of Japan's unworthy ambition. The difference was only one of degree. I assume Japan's greed was more unworthy, but the greater unworthiness conferred no right on the less unworthy of destroying without mercy men, women, and children of Japan in a particular area. The moral to be legitimately drawn from the supreme tragedy of the bomb is that it will not be destroyed by counter-bombs, even as violence cannot be by counter-violence. Mankind has to get out of violence only through non-violence. Hatred can be overcome only by love. Counter-hatred only increases the surface as well as the depth of hatred. I am aware that I am repeating what I have many times stated before and practiced to the best of my ability and capacity. What I first stated was itself nothing new. It was as old as the hills. Only I recited no copybook maxim, but definitely announced what I believed in every fiber of my being. 60 years of practice in various walks of life has only enriched the belief which experience of friends has fortified. It is, however, the central truth by which one can stand alone without flinching. I believe in what Max Müller said years ago, namely, that truth needed to be repeated as long as there were men who disbelieved it. If we are to reach real peace in this world, and if we are to carry on a real war against war, we shall have to begin with the children. And if they will grow up in their natural innocence, we won't have to struggle. We won't have to pass fruitless, idle resolutions, but we shall go from love to love and peace to peace, until at last all the corners of the world are covered with that peace and love for which, consciously or unconsciously, the whole world is hungering. I want to realize brotherhood or identity not merely with the beings called human, but I want to realize identity with all life, even with such beings as crawl on earth. I do believe that all God's creatures have the right to live as much as we have. Instead of prescribing the killings of the so-called injurious fellow creatures of ours as a duty, if men of knowledge had devoted their gifts to discovering ways of dealing with them otherwise than by killing them, we would be living in a world befitting our status as men, animals endowed with reason and the power of choosing between good and evil, right and wrong, violence and non-violence, truth and untruth.
Guru Charan ki.
writings should be cremated with my body. What I have done will endure, not what I have said and written. I've often said recently that even if all our scripture were to perish, one mantra of Ishopanishad was enough to declare the essence of Hinduism. But even that one verse will be of no avail if there is no one to live it. Even so, what I have said and written is useful only to the extent that it has helped you to assimilate the great principles of truth and ahimsa. If you have not assimilated them, then my writings will be of no use to you. Let Gandhiism be destroyed if it stands for error. Truth and ahimsa will never be destroyed, but if Gandhiism is another name for sectarianism, it deserves to be destroyed. If I were to know, after my death, that what I stood for had degenerated into sectarianism, I should be deeply pained. We have to work away silently. Let no one say that he is a follower of Gandhi. It is enough that I should be my own follower. I know what an inadequate follower I am of myself, for I cannot live up to the convictions I stand for.
Guru Charan Ki.